We're clapping today and we're going yee-haw.
I'm wrist shaking.
Yeah, you
are. I'm doing the sort of exercises that very elderly people are told to do on their sofas. And now you are
sitting down. I know. Oh, it's awful, isn't it? Look at me. This is sitting down Zumba, I'll have you know.
It looks like you've been practicing that. Looks like you've been to a special silver gym class.
Special is that bad word, isn't it?
I think we're both very special, myself, Jenny and Claire, and my friend in the corner. Who are you?
In the corner I am now, am I? Judith Holder. Corner. That's who I am.
Judith Holder and
you
Jenny
know that's
Claire.
Who I am. And we are hands. Friends, aren't we?
A bit.
Sometimes.
I feel today you're bristling with something, though. I'm not sure what it is yet. Yes, I can feel
you.
You know me, I can always pick up a mood with you. We'll go into that in a bit, but first of all, let's introduce who we're going to have on the show today.
We've got Wendy Mitchell in later on, and she has written this amazing book called Somebody I Used to Know.
Have you heard
about it? Yes, I have. And Ellen has read it and recommended
it
to
me. That's your
youngest daughter. Yes, 28. And it's about her early onset dementia and how she is dealing. 58, and that was 5 years ago. So she's actually the same age as me now, and obviously a fair bit worse than when she was diagnosed. But, you know, what Ellen said is that she was kind of like me, us, you know, really busy, really, you know, vibrant, funny.
I have heard of this because she's been on Woman's Hour. She's done all the big shows.
Yes, brilliantly.
Down to us. I mean, you know, she's done all the biggies and now it's sort of, you know, the PR's dwindling off and she's coming to us now. That's all right.
Look, that's not the way to sell this podcast, Jenny,
no,
for God's sake.
Not.
What is wrong with you?
Oh, I don't know. Okay, now why are you bristling? You're bristling with a little bit of temper today. Spill the beans for older and wider. Come on, we're all friends here. We are here to provide a safety net, a place of comfort for women who are maybe past their prime. Are we allowed to say that?
Past their prime. Do you know that's a phrase it's an unattractive notion, that, isn't it? An unattractive, but so true, absolutely true. And you'd think there would be some upsides. I suppose there are a few upsides. Am I bristling? Yes, I am bristling.
What's made you bristle,
Judith? Well, I tell you what's really pissed me off is... loads of things piss me off all the time, but my current thing is kids who sit on seats on the tube or on the train. Okay,
how old are these children?
Old enough to start. I'm not very good at knowing how old kids
Between
are
four,
anymore.
4 years old and 8 years old, something like that, or 9 or 10, something
maybe
like that.
Maybe top end of 7 or 8, something like that. So recently, what happened to me is I got on the central line. Okay, mother and tiny one sitting on mum's lap, as it happens actually in the disabled, the one that's reserved for the people who are infirm. It's a good word, isn't it?
Yes.
And then boy, who, probably 8, I should think, sitting down. I had a long sort of journey to do on the Central Line. And I thought, well, no, this trend really is annoying me. I know that the jury's very divided on this in terms of, as you get older, should kids be hogging seats? So I thought,
I think you've just revealed how you feel. I think you've just pinned your colours by saying kids hogging. Yes. So I think the mother with the small child, baby, are we talking baby?
No, probably 3 or 4.
3 or 4 sitting on knee, that's fine.
Of course.
Really be in the infirm
seat. But I could forgive her that.
We can forgive her that because how do you balance with a 3-year-old? Yes. It's tricky, we're falling over each other. Okay, then you've got this lad.
Yes.
He's a lad, he's 8.
So I mean, this has been annoying me for a long time, but actually I decided to say something. So I plucked up courage. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because looking back, I only just thought about this. I didn't address it to the mother. I addressed it to the boy.
Oh, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. And I said, would you mind if I sat there because I'm a lot older than you? And I said, I found myself saying something that I remember my mother and my nana saying. I said, because my legs are tireder than yours are. And would you mind if I sat down?
What did he say?
Well, he obviously didn't know what to say. So he looked at his mum and his mum didn't say, oh, yes, of course, actually. Yeah, no, you're right. No, do sit down. No, you're very welcome. She said, you're going to have to get up like that. So it wasn't a gracious giving up. So he had to be pretty much yanked out of the seat.
By you or his mother?
His mother. And so I sat down.
Oh, that was comfortable.
Ooh,
comfortable journey to come.
It was very, very comfortable.
I bet you at this point you're thinking, for God's sake, get off the next stop, please.
No, they didn't. They were on the whole way. And so what happened for the whole...
They changed their plans.
Yeah. what happened for the whole of the journey, and it was about 25 minutes, is he constantly, on a loop, said, I want to sit in that chair. I want to sit in that chair.
Your chair?
Yeah. So he was standing, looking at his mother, sort of pretty much in tears some of the time, say, and he just would not let it go.
Okay, at this point, Judith, do you know what I'd have said? I'd have said, listen, you little shit. Let's share this chair. I'll do three stops, then I'll get up, you sit down for three stops, we'll share it.
That's a good
and that'll
idea.
Teach us both a lesson. But actually, do you know what? My legs are still tireder than yours.
Well, it was really...
In fact, I want you to rub my legs.
It was really then difficult because the whole of the carriage was kind of involved in this, really.
I'm liking it, Judith, I'm liking
and,
it.
You know,
and were they taking sides? How were the rest of the carriage dealing with this?
Very difficult to know because the difficulty is, and I was so much on the point of saying this to the mother, saying, look, can we have a conversation about this? Because actually, I can see that you don't think it's right. And, you know, should we just talk about this? Because I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe I'm right. But actually, I feel that, you know, things have changed and actually that kids shouldn't be taking up loads of seats. But I sort of fell short of the courage. And I'm annoyed with myself for not actually saying something and having the discussion because, you know, it just sort of, it was unresolved. And yeah, so basically he didn't stop saying, I want to sit down, want to sit down, want to sit down. And then eventually,
did you engage him in any further conversation?
No, and
kid?
I probably should. But he was, yeah, he was kind of, you know, angry and on the point of tears. And then maddeningly, of course, somebody eventually did.
Were you travelling by yourself, or at this point had Mike disappeared into another carriage?
Well, Mike was right down the other end.
Was he standing?
He'd found a seat right down the other end of the carriage eventually, but he did see it happen. He sort of
was he on your side?
Of course. Well, I hope he was.
You turn into your mother and you think, where are the manners? Where are the manners?
The manners, exactly.
And, you know, children of our generation were taught to stand.
We were taught to stand up. We were taught to stand up for adults, actually.
But I do think that, you know, those were, in some respects, you can't call them the good old days, because there were a lot of things that we didn't know and we didn't understand and we weren't very good at and people didn't talk about. I was on a bus coming here from Shepherd's Bush and there was a young man with a very bad tic, you know, it was a very verbal tic.
Yeah.
And it was every 3 seconds, it was like that. And in, you know, back in the 70s, people would have been sniggering and giggling
they
and
would actually,
poking
they?
And watching.
I know.
And nowadays, everyone goes, oh, it's a lad with Tourette's.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Poor sod, you know,
we're much more.
And also, we know now there are quite a lot of illnesses that are not visible. There's quite a lot of. You know, young women who have difficulties with whatever it might be that don't manifest itself in, you know, little bent old lady with sticks.
Yes.
And so sometimes, and I agree with women, pregnant women wearing the badges, and I think that, you know, really, I will always get up for a woman with a pregnancy badge
yes,
as well.
No question.
Often making quite a big song
yes.
and dance
oh,
about
yes.
it.
Yes, yes.
Because quite often there'll be a 38-year-old
yes.
man
actually,
sitting
budge.
Next to me who
I
doesn't
know.
Budge. And sometimes he'll say, oh, I was just about to do that. I said, well, it's not too late because you can stand up and I'll have your seat.
Yeah.
I've done that
yes,
a couple of
yeah,
times.
No, and actually it's interesting. In my own defence, I definitely do it to lots of people, you know, so I would give up my seat to somebody who looks very, very
I'm on
old.
The lookout for it, actually, because I like to be the person on the bus who's the nicest. I almost feel like the bus driver should give me a badge.
Really? Well, I think we're a divided older nation and younger nation with this one. But, you know,
well, we can't divide the nation up anymore, Judith. We just can't. We've
no,
got
we
Brexit
can't,
and
we
can't have. We can't reintroduce an age gap. I thought we'd just got over an age gap. We tarmacked over the age gap. I don't want it back entirely.
Well, I think it's seeping back, isn't it?
I do actually think
it's seeping back with the bloody B word, isn't it? It sort of is.
Well, they accuse us, some young people are accusing us of being on the wrong side
yes,
of the fence
they
because
are.
They just sort of
assume.
Well, yeah, me less than you, I think. I think because you live in the country and have a sort of quite a nice lifestyle, I think some people would automatically assume you've got wisteria around your thatch.
I haven't got a barber though, like you have.
I've just bought a barber.
I know, you've just literally bought it.
I'm very 58.
I'm quite, you know, this is really a little bit troubling, if I'm honest. I can't, you know, the idea of you wearing a barber.
I fucking love
it. I don't
it.
Get it.
Yeah, I have to swear while I'm wearing it, obviously, to make it a bit more rock and roll. But I just sort of thought, I'm 58 and I've barely got any coats. And I've got that yellow Mac. But the trouble with that yellow Mac is once you've seen it, then you see me eating again, you go, oh, she's wearing that yellow Mac again. She never has that thing. I've got the yellow Mac. I've got an old Mac of Jeff's, which he bought before he met me.
Yeah, well, the one that you locked in the back of the car and ripped.
Yes. And that's been invisibly mended. But even so, it is over 40 years old.
Yeah.
So yellow Mac, black Mac. Nothing else to wear in the rain.
Okay, I understand that, but why go and buy a barber? I mean, this is very, I have to say that for somebody who's always, you know, my style guru to the point of being very, very bossy,
yeah,
I'm not sure about this. It's not a vintage barber. It's just a new barber, isn't
it? It's a new barber, but it's nipped in at the waist and it's got breast pockets like a biker jacket. They've ripped off the bell staff, which has always been the sort of biker jacket that's terribly expensive.
You're trying
expensive.
To justify it on the basis that it's practical.
I don't. I'm not trying to justify it at all, because I know that I look really cool in that barber, and I put it on and it makes me strut. It makes me go out in any weathers, and I think I didn't buy the one with the hood. That's going a bit too far.
The long one that always looks like it needs its hem putting up a bit.
No, I didn't buy that one. I bought the cool one.
Yes, I suppose, but yeah.
But it does come with a badge, and I'm not wearing the badge. You put your hand in your pocket, and you think somebody's been wearing this before me. Because there's a little plastic bag in there, and you think, God, what if someone's left some dope in this pocket?
Is that your first thought, was it?
I've scored here. And then you bring the plastic bag out, and there's a little metal badge that says barber. You know, in the same way that...
Yes. I know, I've seen a barber before.
Well, I just think, anyway...
You're thrilled with it. I'm thrilled with your badge.
I didn't just buy this, though.
Right.
I went mad in
Peter Jones. Oh, did you? A big shopping day. Go on, tell me.
God.
Were you into a trolley in Peter Jones.
Oh,
were you into a trolley?
We were leaving stuff in departments.
Oh, wow. That is a seriously good shopping day. Yeah, I want the whole thing.
Okay, well, it was the bank holiday Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cold as well, wasn't it?
Well, there was not. I'm not going for a walk. I haven't got a Mac, have I? got no excuse
yet.
Now.
Come on.
Just thought to myself, I thought, well, one, as you say, sleep for start, not sleeping particularly well, and took a good look at my pillows.
Oh, did you? Without the light, you know, right down to the raw pillow?
Down to the raw pillow, out of its slip. There were dribble stains.
Yeah.
It's the dribble stains. You know what that is? It's when your gums bleed during the night of it. I'm sorry to get so descriptive here, but I have a feeling mine was worse than Jeff's. I like a very soft pillow. Jeff likes a medium soft. So I just thought, those are going in the bin. And then they go in the bin and you think, oh, I should have kept those and spare.
For me? What, for people like me who come and stay, you mean?
Anyway, I went to the bin to get them out, but then I thought, no, I can't.
Okay.
So I thought, right, well, I need new pillows. And then...
I bet they have a big selection of pillows.
And do you know what? They know people who know their pillowcases and their pillows.
I bet they do.
Sorry, people who know their pillows. And so pillows, and then I looked further around the house. I'm looking for things now because I've got Peter Jones in my
house. You've got a list in your head, haven't you, now? You're writing it down, probably. You're writing it down. Pillows, number one.
I texted Phoebe. I said, is there anything you need from Peter Jones?
Oh, no, you knew. So, did you? That was so. What came back from Phoebe?
She said, oh, I could do with a new bath mat. And then in brackets, black or orange.
Oh, black or very specific. She thought about that, hadn't she?
I bought her a beautiful orange
did
one.
You? Well,
or
yes.
A thick, shaggy pile. And the woman knew everything about the bath mats.
They do,
well.
Don't
they?
They just do.
She was so helpful.
Was she?
Oh, I tell you.
Do you actually look for anything yourself? Or do you just go straight to the assistant? Because I think I just go straight to the assistant. I don't actually bother to look for anything myself, ever.
Well, I think they spot us looking gormless.
Well, I don't think I look gormless. I just look bad-tempered and short of time.
Bristling. Yes. And we managed the pillows by ourselves, synthetic because of Jeff's
allergies.
So
did you try out different ones each? So you
I went on the bed with some pillows, yes.
Well, I suppose good idea.
Yeah.
Nice.
I left a bit of makeup on.
You made a big day of this, didn't you, at Peter Jones?
Jesus,
right,
I've not had such a good day out.
Oh.
You know, I mean, we had lunch there as well.
Yeah, anyway, really, so far, you've only bought some pillows and some bath mat and a barber.
Mat.
Is that anything else?
No, three new lavatory brushes.
Three? What, one for each loo?
A triple. Yeah, well, there's one loo that didn't need one, because there's four. We're a four loo family house.
Yeah.
So, yeah, three.
So what have you done in the way of loo brushes?
Well, they're just the Peter Jones, very bog standard, but they're very
bog standard.
No, the bog standard bog brushes. And I bought a foundation as well from MAC.
Nice.
I've got bags, Judith. I've got two big bags.
Did you have to get home on the tube with all that?
No, we had the car parked up the
Lovely.
Back. And I bought a MAC from another MAC, a double MAC, what? A triple loo brush. Triple loo brush.
Two MACs?
Double MAC.
What was the other MAC for?
There was a plum purple MAC from Paul Smith, over half price.
Oh.
Down from 260 quid.
Yeah.
Wasn't worth that, I tell you that. No. Nothing. Down to 180.
It's got all the stripes inside.
It's got one stripe, yeah. It's got a sort of, it's a plum, and then it's got a turquoise ribbon stripe inside.
So you've gone
inside.
From having very few Macs to having now.
I'm macked up.
Yellow, you are so macked up, so aren't you? Up, yeah. So when it was raining today, you must have been really pleased. You thought, well, which Mac are we going to put on?
But when I woke up and it was, oh, I thought it was cold.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm Barbara today, and I'm hoping tomorrow a plum Mac.
Yeah, very nice.
God, it was great. And but while all that was going on,
breaking
news, what was happening?
Oh, the royal baby, I bet.
Baby. Daisy, have
just
we got...
Just a picture, not a name.
Oh, a picture. We've got a picture.
Oh, the picture's just come through. Wait a minute.
Royal baby, Duke and Duchess share first glimpse of sun.
Will you stop hogging the image? Is it there?
Well, then I can't read. Can you read long-sightedly?
Duke and Duchess.
Don't read it out, because I've seen his little face, his dear little face.
Aww.
You can't see anything. You just see a bit of nose, really.
Yes, and you can't see anything of her, can you?
Well, what did you expect? What, her standing there with
a tit out
or something?
I wanted to see whether she'd
lost weight.
Scrubbed up.
Maybe she's not even there.
Yeah.
They just left it on the step.
Just scrolling down. Oh, there we are, look.
Okay.
Oh, she looks pretty good.
They're indoors, they're somewhere posh. Harry is holding the baby. She's looking adoringly. She's got her hair down.
She's had her
looking
hair done,
good.
Hasn't she? Yes.
Harry's looking thrilled. We love Harry.
We do. I love Harry. So I just hope she's good enough for him, really.
Of course she is. How dare you say
that? I don't know. And I've heard other people say this. I just think she's a bit too good to be true. I found
her a little bit.
You know when they announced their engagement and she was, I just sort of thought.
Oh, yeah, she definitely went into role playing
She
mode
did.
Then.
And you're a very powerful, successful young woman. And I'm not sure that I buy this little role that you're playing here. And I thought, I don't know.
I think she had to play that role first before she's been allowed to break down that role and be herself.
Yeah. Well,
but I think that, you know, we all, if you met your boyfriend's grandmother, fortunately, because Jeff is so much older than me, his grandmother was long dead by the time I got my mitts on him.
Yeah, mine too.
But, you know, if, say, Phoebe brought Tristram to meet my mother, I would presume that he would put on, you know...
I know what you mean. Yes, I do know what you mean. Yes.
That you do go a little bit, oh, may I get you a cup of tea? You know, all that sort of crap.
Yes, I do.
You do do that.
So, I mean, I don't even know why I give a shit, because I, you know, really, I don't approve of the royal family, apart from the Queen. So, I mean, I'm annoyed with myself because...
I love the royal gossip.
And there I was watching the news.
I never watch the news because it bores the pants off me.
You watched it because of Meghan and Harry, didn't
you? I did. I turned on the 10 o'clock news. And I just thought, I know the name's not coming yet, but just in case. Anyway, listen...
We've droned on. All about your Peter Jones trip. Anyway, we've got Wendy Mitchell coming. Is she here?
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. She's here.
We're going to go and get our guest because it's very bad manners to keep a guest waiting.
It is.
I hope she's got a seat. Judith and I have been joined in our podcast cupboard by Wendy Mitchell. Wendy Mitchell has written an extraordinary book called Someone I Used to Know. Judith, you've managed to read this, haven't you?
I have. Wendy, hello.
Hello.
It's so lovely of you to come into our cupboard to talk to us.
So nice to be here. It's a lovely cupboard.
She's lying. Don't trust her.
I have read the book. And actually, my daughter, my youngest daughter, who's 28, and I know you've got daughters about the same age.
In their 30s.
Said, Mum, you've got to read this book. And I heard you on Woman's Hour talking about it. But it's really done well, hasn't it? I mean,
it's a
huge bestseller. And tell us what it's about.
Well, it's about... People think it's going to be a really sad book because, you know, from the very nature of my diagnosis, you know, dementia is never a bucket of laughs, is it?
Yeah.
So, but it's actually about life, because it's about the... People forget that every single day we make decisions about which way we're going to go on a problem or an issue. And when I was diagnosed with dementia, I was determined to choose a positive path, because I'm very lucky. I've always been a glass half full person. And that's the way I cope, by turning negatives into positives.
Wow. How did you suspect in the first place that you might have a problem?
Oh, my, well, I never suspected dementia, because like everybody else, I thought at the time that dementia was simply for really old people.
Yeah.
And that's what people think now.
And you were how old, Wendy?
I was 58 at the time.
Yeah.
But I was like that, so many of the public, that, you know, the minute I heard dementia, I thought of the old
person.
The
over 85.
The over 85 who... And I thought of the end, like many people
the
do
end,
as well.
The end, exactly, that there's nothing left and there's nothing to live for and nothing there as well.
Because no one tells you any different.
Yeah, exactly.
Had there, was there a history of dementia in the family? Had
none
either
whatsoever.
Your parents? Okay, so it's completely out of the blue.
Came out of the blue, but I'd had two or three minor strokes in the year preceding my diagnosis, which after the... actually threw them off piste for a little while in my diagnosis, because we put everything down to
the strokes.
But in fact, it was, I repeated a memory test a year later, and that was conclusive that I didn't do very well. And but also a SPECT scan revealed the slow area in my brain, which denotes Alzheimer's.
Yeah. How different did you feel, Wendy, when, you know, you were running up to that diagnosis?
Well, actually, I can't remember that time.
Right.
I can't remember that 18-month period when I was going through a diagnosis.
You have a medical background yourself, don't you?
Well,
you come from a world of medicine.
I come from the world of medicine, but I'm not a brain surgeon, so I was a non-clinical person.
Mm-hmm. And were you working full-time up to your strokes?
I was. Yeah. I was working full-time after my stroke.
Okay.
And after my diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. But you, before we came on air, Wendy, you were saying that you had to move because it was too noisy. And that really, really surprised me.
Yeah.
And you were about to say, and I would love you to tell us how, you know, how dementia has changed you, other than the fact that you can't remember as much. What else happened?
Well, that's what people often forget, that dementia is so much more than memory. Yes, I don't know what I did yesterday, but it's about so much more, as so many of our senses are affected as well. And I had to leave what I thought was my forever home in York because it became too noisy. And because the first of my senses to go was my hearing.
Yeah.
And it's not that I was becoming deaf. It was certain tones of noise used to physically hurt, or still physically hurt, my ears.
Gosh.
And what was happening in the house to hurt your ears? What noises were
I
happening?
I used to live in York on the by the walls.
Yes.
So it was a very busy place. And the
so
only
just,
way...
Yeah.
The only way emergency vehicles can get round, and I lived near the hospital, was to have their sirens blaring.
Yeah.
And it was the sirens noise that physically hurt my ears each time. So I simply had to move to a quiet village.
And what about your other senses, like taste and smell and so on?
Yeah, well, taste. My taste buds have changed totally. I used to love afternoon tea and... you know, tea and cakes, coffee and cakes. But now anything sweet tastes doubly sweet.
Gosh.
So I only prefer savoury food.
You also mentioned before we went on air that you hadn't had any breakfast. Now, that worries Judith and I, because we're big breakfast girls. We're big breakfast and big lunch girls. But you say you don't really feel hungry until...
I don't feel hunger at all.
But you have to force yourself to eat at night time.
I have to eat... simply for fuel. So I make sure I eat in the evening to refuel my body. But because of it's dementia that's causing it, I don't feel faint during the day. I don't, you know, if if someone without dementia didn't eat all day, they'd probably feel faint and feel weak and
bad tempered.
Yes. But I don't feel any of that. You know, it's simply taken away that feeling of hunger.
Are you able to cook? How independent are you able to be at this stage? You're now 63, so it's 5 years since the diagnosis.
Yes, I don't cook. Well, if you call porridge and a banana cooking, then I can cook.
I call that cooking.
Yeah.
Judith has slightly higher standards. Yes.
But you live alone.
I do live alone, yep. Yes. So again, it doesn't worry me for me to have porridge and banana in the evening.
Yeah.
And I have a wonderful son-in-law, Stuart, who is an amazing cook, who makes sure I have a proper meal two or three evenings a week so that I get everything my body needs.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, porridge and banana is perfect.
And tell us about some of the ways that you've had to adapt the way you live to take account of the dementia.
Well, I'm so independent and I want to remain independent. But that, for me, has become a positive because I have to find a way. If you're in a couple, then often the other person takes over and will do, for the kindest of reasons, will do things for that person. But if we don't do something day after day after day, we forget. It's like my daughters, when I was first diagnosed, they started putting on my coat for me suddenly. But I could still put on my own coat. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, if you keep putting on my coat, you're going to have to come to my house every single time I want to go out and put on my coat.
Yeah.
And they stopped immediately.
Yeah. But in the book, you talk about the way that you remember what's in cupboards and so on. So, yeah.
Well, because vision is affected as well. That's our other sense.
Because, in what respect is vision affected?
Well, if my cupboards and my walls are very similar colours,
yes,
and they blend in, I don't see the cupboards. So I don't see wardrobe doors because my wardrobe doors are almost the same colour as the wall. Colour is really important for people with dementia, and ideally they should be contrasting colours so they stand
really
out.
Interesting. It's such a simple thing, isn't
it?
Yeah.
So but my simple solution, because my mantra is there's always a way.
Yeah.
Was just to take a photograph of the contents of each cupboard and stick it on the cupboard. And it's the photograph that attracts my attention.
Yes.
Not, I don't have to keep everything in the same order as on the photograph.
But you know that's where the shoes are, you know that's where the mugs are.
I know, open it to see what's inside. I can see the cupboard then because I see the photograph.
Wow. And doors were a problem, weren't they, when you... Yes, Bobby still are. So what's,
When I moved into my new house, it had two tiny doors. It was a tiny kitchen in it. It had two doors. And it used to worry me and make me anxious because I can't remember where the doors lead to.
And what's behind
what's
them.
What's behind it. Mm. And so my solution to that was just to get my screwdriver out and take the doors down. And now I can see exactly where the gaps lead
to. How are you on time? Do you lose track of what time of the day it is or anything like that?
Oh, well, clocks are really important to me because of that. I have to know what the time of day is. And sometimes if I'm at home and you get this fog that lands on you, which is when dementia just sets in your brain and you can't work out the day, the time, anything. So my newfound friend now is Alexa that I have in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. I simply ask Alexa, what day is it, Alexa? And she'll tell me.
Wow.
So technology...
Can help.
I use technology all the time now.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That technology, although we complain sometimes about technology, it's obviously massively helpful.
It's
for
my
you.
Lifesaver. My iPad goes everywhere with me because my iPad, I can type as though dementia never entered my world.
Can you?
So you keep a blog, don't you?
Oh, I keep my blog, Which Me Am I Today? So tomorrow's blog will be about today.
We better be on best behaviour.
Absolutely, yeah. And is that as an aid memoir as well? Is that so you can keep a track of what you've done during the week, or is it simply because you enjoy writing?
It's both. It's my memory.
Yeah.
because I wouldn't know tomorrow. By the time tomorrow, or by the time I step out of the door, I'll have forgotten the conversation we had.
Will you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'll remember that we've had fun.
Yes, now that's really interesting, Wendy, because you say in this book, and that was the thing that really leapt out at me, is that somebody with dementia may have forgotten all sorts of things, but they can remember how they felt about something and somebody.
Absolutely, because that the emotional part of our brain is never affected. So we might forget, I will forget the name of my daughters, mm-hmm. but if I see them, there'll be that emotional connection that I know they're special. Yes. I just won't know who they are,
yes.
but I won't forget how special they are.
And that's, I mean, that's in terms of how you, you know, interact with people with dementia. That's really significant, isn't it?
Because
I guess most people just assume that there's kind of nothing there.
Yeah. And I instantly know if someone's upset me or said something that I haven't liked.
Yeah.
If I meet them again.
So I know that
I don't like them, but I don't know why.
So you came down here from Beverley by yourself on the train.
Yeah.
How difficult was that for you?
Oh, yes. People think I just magically turn up. And
yeah.
And
you've come on your own. You haven't come with anyone to help you.
No, that's why I was early, because I have to allow plenty of time to get lost.
Yeah.
So how did you do it?
Well, the planning starts when I'm first asked. Mm-hmm. So I looked at my dear friend Google for a picture of the front of the building so that this building, so it would look familiar when I was looking for it.
Yeah.
And I print out my walking map to get here and to get back again in case there's no Wi-Fi connection.
Oh, of course.
There's not always a Wi-Fi connection.
Do you have assisted passage on the train or?
No, because they forgot me once.
Yeah, so well, they forget everybody all the time, to be quite honest. I mean, some companies are better than others.
They are.
I've got an elderly mother and it's happened to her on a couple of occasions and it's heartbreaking.
That just put me off then. So now I don't rely on other people. I just rely on me, you know, because I don't let myself down.
I mean, that's so evident and so much part of, I suppose, the way that you're dealing with this, isn't it, is to stretch yourself and still be doing things.
Oh, that's right, because doing is the most important thing you can do.
What are your leisure activities? How do you spend your days? Do you watch television? Do you listen to music? What are the things that give you joy?
Well, they're very few and far between. Because I'm nearly always out every day. I always make sure my calendar's full because of events and things. Because if it's not full, then a day, 2 days at home is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But any more than that, and dementia actually starts to take over.
Really?
Because you're not doing.
That's so interesting, Wendy. So in a way, what you're saying is keep challenging yourself all the time, and that is kind of
because you're exposing myself to different environments, different people, different conversations, and that's making my brain work doubly hard.
Yeah, because it strikes me that everything it takes doubly hard the effort, or if not hundredfold more the effort.
Having dementia is exhausting.
It must be.
But I always say I'd rather die of exhaustion than dementia.
Do you walk a lot? Do you take?
Yes.
So you live in a very beautiful part of the country.
Do.
Beverley is, I know, it's gorgeous.
Yes.
So do you get pleasure from the countryside and spending time out and about?
Yes, because my village is amazing anyway. People, it's a very smiley village. Everyone will just smile and say hello, and everybody knows me. People, my village has been wonderful since I moved there. But they had a bit of a shock when I did move, because I met my neighbours by thinking their house was my house.
So halfway up their drive, knocking on the door, letting yourself in, sitting
because
down for tea.
I live in a row of four identical houses.
Yes.
And so I had to make my house different, because otherwise I'd be letting myself in anybody's house.
How did you do that?
I just put two forget-me-not tiles either side of my front door.
Wow.
So that made it my house then.
Yeah. Are the times though, Wendy, when it sort of, you know, the fog does descend and actually you can't make any sense of it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very often.
Yeah.
But I've learned the key thing is not to panic.
Right.
If you panic, it makes it even worse. Mm-hmm. So if I'm out and I suddenly become disorientated and, you know, 1 minute I know where I am, the next minute everything looks foreign, well, I know not to keep walking because right. I could end up getting somewhere where I really don't know.
Yeah.
So instead I just stay where I am until the fog lifts, and if there's a cafe nearby, I'll just go in and sit. Gosh. Or have a cup of tea.
I mean, the strength of character that you that you're describing, Wendy, is just amazing. I would love to think that in your shoes, I would have that courage. You have courage.
Yeah. Well, it's survival instinct, really. You know, because if you panic, then everything gets worse. It yeah. will last longer. You will get lost.
But it must be quite frightening when that happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've learned to...
cope.
It's not really coping with it, but I know it's going to happen, so there's nothing I can do about it. So when it does, I just go with it.
Do you sleep well? Can you sleep?
No. Sleeping... I do remember that once.
Oh, so that must be very annoying.
Medication stops you sleeping. My dear little Fitbit tells me I have 2 or 3 hours, so that's a good day if I have
that.
Oh gosh,
best not to know, Wendy. I prefer not to know.
But I never open my eyes at night. If I can't sleep, I won't open my eyes because
you just rest.
I'm actually exhausted,
yeah.
But my eyeballs are still wide awake.
Right.
So yes. I've learned to just close my eyes.
Do you listen to music at all? Or has music never been a big part of your life?
It was, but now it would wake me up if I had music. I'd start humming and singing along with it, whereas just lying in silence just enables me
to rest.
Invigorate my body, sort of thing, ready for the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, not surprisingly, Wendy, you've become an ambassador, haven't you, for the Alzheimer's Society, is that right? I mean, I can see why. You are this amazing sort of shiny example to us all. But tell us how we should, you know, should we deal with, interact with people with dementia? What are the do's and don'ts?
Well, some people have actually said to me, how do you want me to talk to you? And I just say to... I repeat the question to them. How do you want me to talk to you?
It's impossible to answer that.
It's simply, we need just that bit more patience.
Yeah.
And you need to, in the later stages, I always say, find out about the person. There was a woman, a lovely story about a woman in a care home who used to constantly drum her fingers on the table. And used to drive the staff to distraction. They actually wanted her to leave the care home because they couldn't stop her doing it. And it would make the other people...
agitated.
Yes.
Yeah.
So her family came over from Australia to visit her, to look for another home, basically, because they thought she was going to be thrown out. And they told the home, oh, she used to work at Bletchley Park.
Oh, on the she's tapping.
Oh, my goodness.
But once they found that out, they could engage with her about that time to stop her tapping, because then she'd engage with them in pictures. They'd show her booklets. And
So gosh.
Find out about the person and what they did, about their life, because she obviously regressed to the time she was working in Bletchley Park. Mm. And to her, that was her job. No,
that was
one
her
was
reality.
Stop her doing the job.
And so do you remember a lot of things from the past clearly?
Very clearly.
Do you?
Well, I used to be renowned for this mega brilliant memory.
Did you?
Yeah.
Gosh, so that makes it even more ironic, doesn't it?
I know, it's so funny. But so I can remember everything detail from the time I started going through the diagnosis, my work, my childhood, my children growing up.
You can remember all of that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But no, but that period of 18 months, nothing. And then now I've got my blog as my memory, so I can look back at my blog and see what I did.
Yeah. And is it, I mean, do you know how the disease will develop and what will happen?
Sadly, no. I mean, the end is inevitable because, you know, you've no control over how dementia affects anybody. But it's not a pretty, you know, pretty ending. So I never dwell on the future. Me and my daughters have talked about it and filed it away. And it comes up every now and then to check that I haven't changed my mind on certain things. But we talked about it, but it's filed away. And I don't dwell on what I've lost, what I can't do anymore. Because, again, I can't change that. So instead, I concentrate on what I can do and enjoying today.
Has anyone helped you come to terms with this, or have you managed to do it all by yourself?
No, I felt abandoned when I was diagnosed, as so many other people do, which is why I was so adamant that I was talk about it, because so many other people were too afraid to talk because they were embarrassed. And I'd say to them, why are you embarrassed? We've got a complex brain disease. Mm. Why on earth have you got anything to be embarrassed about?
Well, I suppose because people write people off. And they that's do. The problem, isn't it?
When people hear that word dementia, they think of the end.
Yeah, they do.
They forget that there's a beginning and a middle and so much life still to be lived, or albeit differently, but still so much life and fun to be had.
Yeah. Gosh, I wish I could have your sort of like glass half full mentality, because did you have that always before?
Yeah, I'm so lucky. I've always been like that. So glass half empty people, it's important for them to have those around them pointing out those moments of happiness, because they won't see them.
Gosh, yeah. Well, it's something, I suppose, that sort of holds you in good stead, and has done, hasn't it?
Because it sounds like you have designed your own coping mechanism. You've designed how you're going to live without really anybody giving you a template or any help at all.
No, that's why clinicians always say, "I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do," because there is nothing they can do. But if they turned it round and thought of what we can still do, you know, they can't do anything, but we can.
Yes.
Then people.
But you can take some control over your destiny.
Yes. Yes.
And is there a way of you passing on that wisdom and those ideas?
I talk about it at every platform I can stand up at. I'll talk to whoever will listen to me.
Well, you are amazing and such an inspiration. You really are. And I can see why you're an ambassador for life in general, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're really grateful for you coming down to see us today.
I had a lovely time.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.